Slow Dive mit Star Rovin auf Flux FM am Montagnachmittag. Slow Dive aus England, sie sind zurück nach über 20 Jahren, wird am 5. Mai eine vierte LP veröffentlicht werden. Sie wird so heißen wie die Band selber, nämlich Slow Dive. Und heute Abend spielt die Formation, die seit 2014 wieder Konzerte spielt, im schönen Festsaal Kreuzberg. Zwei Menschen aus der Band haben es zu mir ins Studio geschafft. Wir quatschen über die Aufnahmen zur ersten LP nach 22 Jahren und finden heraus, ob der für ein solches Unterfangen notwendige Vibe gleich zu Beginn der ersten gemeinsamen Sessions wieder spürbar war. Wir sprechen über die Vor- und Nachteile einer kleiner werdenden Musikindustrie. Die Situation war in den 90ern eine ganz andere. Wir reden über die böse Presse und die ersten LPs der Band und vieles, vieles mehr. Zunächst sage ich aber nochmal Hello and welcome, Rachel and Nick.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good. Great.
I was just Fantastic. Thinking about that.
Fantastic.
Cool. You've played a show in Paris, I think, the other day.
Paris,
right?
Last night, yes.
Now.
Yeah, that was great.
Cool.
Good fun.
Cool. So you're touring, you're on the road again with the boys.
Indeed. With the boys, yes.
Congratulations on your new record as well. It's going to be released in a few weeks, in the beginning of May here in Germany. Yes. And I want to know how hard or easy was working on that new material. Because, I mean, you started playing together again in 2014, so you kind of like got to know each other again, I think. But to go into the studio and start working on new material, that's a different animal from playing old school songs. How hard was getting the vibe back that you need for Slow Dive recordings?
Well, I think we had to go through those shows before we could really get into it, because we didn't know whether we would be able to make a record or not. So we keep talking about momentum. We needed momentum, and so we kind of got that through those shows. But then it took a while, didn't it? Because it was difficult to to pin us all down, because we all live in different places and we've all got families and stuff. And it took longer than we expected. Yeah. But, you know, it came together and we're really pleased with it. So.
It's more difficult to get a group of 40-year-olds together than a group of 19-year-olds because they have more spare time, right?
We have responsibilities.
Yeah.
So, kids make it tough.
Yeah.
But, you know, we managed to get it together. So.
Yeah. And then how were the first days in the studio? I think Neil did bring some ideas possibly into the studio, and then did you work exactly the same way that you used to work back then? Because I read that back then you had the balls to do sessions in the studio, to enter a studio without having composed too much stuff.
I mean that's certainly kind of true of the first album, Just for a Day, but I think we started off kind of sort of rehearsing a little bit and just jamming to see what would come out of that. And Neil did have some ideas, and then we played around them for a couple of days, and then we kind of went and recorded those sessions. So rather than there being fixed songs at the end of those sessions, there was just like reams and reams of ideas just recorded, and Neil took those back to his studio down in Newquay and kind of picked things out and swapped things around. And
so it's like a best of two worlds, kind of, right?
Yeah. It was like a real mix the way it was done. But there were a couple of longer recording sessions at Courtyard in Abingdon where we did the recording for pretty much for the other three records.
Yeah.
And those were like sort of 2 week blocks, weren't they, Nick? So by that point, you guys had like rehearsed stuff, you know. So they got them sounding like one of the songs on the record was like rehearsed loads and then sort of put down, I guess, almost live, really. And it's all like, so it's just different ways of doing things. And I came in, I was kind of in and out last year because I was quite busy touring away, but I came in sort of right at the end and did seven vocal tracks in 2 days.
Oh, wow.
So we're just like bashing, because vocals always come at the end, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like kind of, these guys get on with it.
That's a pretty impressive tempo, actually, because I mean, vocals always come at the end, but vocals can be a tricky thing too, because
sometimes
but you were fast.
I'm a pro. Just a pro.
And you haven't stopped making music.
No,
I mean,
no,
some of the bands,
that's true,
some of the band's members, they've kind of like stopped making music in a professional sense, right? They did other things.
I mean, I did. I didn't do any music at all between Pygmalion and this new record. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't even...
So you're like, oh, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 strings.
Yeah, well, I still have to remind myself of that. I'm not a natural.
No, but it must be interesting, though, too. Because, I mean, it's like driving a bike, people say, right? You know how to learn...
I'll tell
the
you
instrument,
what,
but the timing and the nuances.
The difficult thing is not so much like back in 2014, preparing for the comeback shows. Mm-hmm. That was kind of easy because I could just get the old CDs out and I could just, you know, I bought a bass and I could sort of remember how to play them, and that was easy. What's much more difficult is trying to get back into being creative.
Yeah,
because you know. I hadn't done anything like that for like 20 odd years. So that was tricky.
Yeah, sometimes I think maybe it's good for your creativity if you take a break. If you don't do music for 20 years.
Yeah,
that was a bit too long.
Maybe 20 minutes.
20 days.
Then I read the whole book wrong and said 20 minutes. Just take a break for 20 minutes if you don't feel creative anymore. And I read 20 years, so I'm sorry about that. It took a bit longer. Now, not only the world has changed a lot since you guys have been around, or since you guys put out the last record, the industry has changed a lot. I think you get that question a lot, but I really think it's interesting because, I think that the situation that we have now is better for Slow Dive than the situation that we had back then.
Because back then, if
you were out of recording days in the studio, you just call the company and you'd be like, "We need £20,000. Because we have to spend a few more days here," and they'd be like, "Yeah, we'll send it over to you, and you'll have it in a few minutes." Because we want you to finish it fast or something like that. But nowadays, you have to take care about more details of the production and stuff. Yeah. And I really think it's a good and healthy thing.
Yeah, I mean,
for the Slow Dive band.
We didn't have a label in place when we recorded this album, and we weren't even sure we wanted to have a record label or whether we would put it out ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it was good that we were able to afford to record it all and pay for it ourselves, because that then gave us a lack of pressure.
Sure.
You know, there was
no Alan McGee, like, where's the pop song on that record?
Well, you know, Alan was wrong, really, wasn't he? But there was no pressure. So, and we were just like, let's just record and see if we can get a record out of this. And it took us, you know, about a year and a half on and off to do it. And then we did talk to some labels, and actually the guys at Dead Oceans just were really great and just seem to be on the same wavelength as them. So I think we're all really happy that we're with them, and that you know, that they're putting it out.
I think it's a tough situation for bands who want to quit their day jobs, you know, because that's basically impossible nowadays.
You have to keep
your day job. But on the other hand, you have so much more possibilities on your fingertips, right? You can, if there's a guy in the band who's talented with production, you can do the production on your own.
There's
a guy in the band who likes doing graphics, he can do the album cover and the t-shirt stuff. And that's how bands look like nowadays, right?
Yeah,
they get off stage in like 4 different offices.
Yeah.
Everybody. I mean,
everyone's multitasking.
Hard. I mean, it's hard too. But I think it's really good for the result of it all, because you really take care of every single detail that's connected to your music.
I think you can still do it in the old-fashioned way, but the difference now is that you have a choice. You can do it.
You don't get the advances that you used to get
that's
in the
true.
90s.
That's true. But, I mean, you could, you know...
Doesn't happen.
You know, we choose to do it the way that we do it, but, I mean, there are other ways we could probably put the record out.
Yeah,
but,
that's
you
true.
Know, you know, I think we're happy with the choice, aren't we?
And I mean, you made, that's why I mentioned Alan McGee, because you had that experience in the 90s where someone from the record company would kind of like jump into the session and be like, "We need more pop music."
I mean, he did, you know, reject, I think it's very well documented, he did reject our first round of songs that we'd put forward for Souvlaki. You know, and I guess in hindsight, looking back, and he was right, I think, at that point. I think he was right. And I think still credit to Creation, because they still put Pygmalion out, even though it was so far removed from anything else they had on the label, and it didn't fit the label. You know, he did still put it out. And so, you know,
Yeah. I mean, it's good. It's good that you say that he was basically right with some things as well.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's not like the cliche thing that the record label bosses are always evil and the bands are nice and good.
No.
So a lot of grey areas.
The third record, he definitely wanted a pop record, yeah. But that wasn't something we were capable of delivering. It wasn't going to happen. And at least he didn't reject what we gave him, at least he was like,
but he dropped you like 3 weeks later.
He dropped you 5 weeks later.
No, give it to me. I'm going to release
this. Put that out and then bye.
That was proper rejection.
Yeah. But we all knew it was coming anyway.
Professional rejection, actually.
By that point, everyone was well aware that we weren't right for the label, yeah. and they weren't right for us, actually,
And that was when the whole Britpop thing started happening, right?
Yeah, and grunge and all and everything, so, you know, it's just of its time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Music goes in cycles.
That's true. And now the slow dive circle has kind of like gone full circle.
Full circle.
Let's listen to Sugar for the Pill, another new song from Slow Dive auf Lux FM. Slow Dive, Sugar for the Pill. 14:45 Minuten. Rachel und Nick sind immer noch bei mir im Studio und wir quatschen noch ein bisschen, bevor ich die beiden dann in den Festsaal Kreuzberg schicke und bevor ich euch die Möglichkeit eröffne, letzte Tickets zu gewinnen für Slow Dive heute Abend in Berlin. It's interesting that the tour has been sold. So many venues have been sold out. Tonight's show is sold out. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I really find it interesting that you guys realize in 2013 or 14 that there's masses of people out there waiting for Slow Dive to reunite. It came as a surprise to you guys as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we really believed it till we walked on stage at Primavera.
Yeah.
And then we were like, oh, okay, now we get it.
That was in Barcelona, the first gig.
I think it was like the third gig. It was the third show. We did two small ones in London, then we went from that to Primavera. And it was there, I think, that it actually hit all of us, I think. That the realization.
Yeah.
I mean, like, oh, okay,
Slow Dive's like, like good red wine. It aged, you know? They put them in a shelf and then they age really well.
Yeah.
And then they come back and the wine is better than it has been in the 90s.
Well, yeah. I mean, people told us that this audience was there for us. You know, people have been telling us for maybe a few years before.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think any of us really believed it. And so, it was a bit of a leap of faith, leap into the unknown. And then, as Rachel says, Primavera was just like ridiculous.
Yeah.
It hasn't all been like Primavera because that was like tens of thousands of people. But, generally it's been...
It's all life.
Yeah, it was.
I never thought I'd see the day.
But everywhere we've been has kind of exceeded our expectations.
Yes.
Yeah, I really can understand why you didn't trust the whole situation, because it was journalists who kind of like hated you in the 90s and wrote the worst things about you. And then they come back 20 years later and they'd be like, oh, there's this huge audience waiting for you. I wouldn't have trusted them then right now.
Yeah.
You know, because like, you wrote the worst thing about a record of ours 20 years ago. Now you're telling me there's an audience waiting for us? I don't believe you.
Yeah, there were a couple of not very nice UK journalists that were like that. I don't know what their names were, actually. They're that
best
forgettable.
Left. Best left unsolved.
It would be a bit strange if you knew their names right now. Because it's been a while.
I guess it would, yeah.
I mean,
it didn't bother me that much because I don't remember their names.
That was just how the music press was at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't the only band to fall foul.
Right?
That's how it was. That was the only outlet, really, people had for reading about new music and stuff. There wasn't the internet. And they would build up a scene and then they'd knock it down. And, they built us up and they knocked us down. But, none of us are kind of bitter about it.
Yeah.
That's just how it was.
But I mean, I was thinking about it and I thought it might have hit you harder because you were really young. If you were in your 20s or maybe in your 30s back then, if you had been in your 30s, you would have been like, I don't care.
It's funny because I think about a year after we started putting records out, I think I pretty much stopped reading the music press because I just got really annoyed with it. And Enemy and Melody Maker were like my Bible growing up as a teenager. I used to read it cover to cover and check music out based on what was written in there, and it became I became very disappointed once I met a lot of these people that used to write, and that the industry as a whole, I found it quite disappointing being on the other side of it. I loved doing the gigs and doing music, but a lot of people around, it weren't so nice, really.
Sometimes
kind of my illusions were shattered.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to leave the curtain closed, right?
Absolutely, So I kind of stopped reading the press for quite a long time.
But it's sad. Like, it's a bit sad, though, because when you tell me that you've read it like a Bible, and then all of a sudden...
But then you meet people, you become disappointed and think, I don't think I can really trust what these people are writing anymore. I don't know. Yeah,
he's on coke all the time. He doesn't know anything about music.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of that sort of stuff going on as well. Yeah.
Now, I've read that Neil had to use the internet to find out about his guitar setup.
I think we all did, yeah.
Is it really like that? That you were like, the record sounds great, but how did I do it?
I went on YouTube and found videos of people playing my bass lines, and I had to copy them.
No!
Yeah, and then it kind of came back, and there was one guy who was doing Allison, and he was doing it really well, but he got one bit wrong. I haven't told him. I should actually tell him, shouldn't I? But that's how I kind of worked some of it out.
We were doing YouTube tutorials, and then I made Christian record private YouTube videos for me.
Sounds
a bit dodgy of guitar parts so that I could learn them.
Record
them, because obviously, you know, we don't live in the same part of the country. I was like, just please video what I need to learn. And so ahead of rehearsing, so we could go and do stuff.
But there's another advantage of the times that we're living in for the band Slow Dive, because back in the 90s, there was no YouTube to send tutorial videos to each other.
No.
It would be a crappy tour. We know how to play.
We wouldn't exist without YouTube.
No, it's a really funny thing that you have a band, and it's gone for 20 years, and then you had that special sound, and then you're like, oh, how did I do the special sound? And there's young kids out there recreating that sound, knowing what you have done back then. It's so funny. It's a history thing.
It is.
It's like spoken history, you know? People are like, I can tell you the bass amp Nick has used in 95. So what can people expect from tonight's show? You're going to do the best of all worlds, or...?
Yeah, it'll be... It's mainly our back catalogue, and there's three new songs.
Ah, cool.
In the mix, we'd love to be playing more, but because the album's not out yet, we are limited. We have been limited to just three.
Yes,
to share.
And we haven't done a club show in Germany since we got back together, have we? We did that festival in Leipzig.
No, I don't think so.
We did a goth festival in Leipzig, which was an experience. A good experience.
Yeah.
So this is the first time that people have been able to sort of see us in a club environment in Germany since the 90s.
Yeah.
So we're going to play like some of the songs that they will know, and then just throw in a few of the new ones.
Cool. It's a sold out show, but we have two tickets left.
Ooh, lucky people.
Maybe it's four. I don't know, but Aisha knows. She's on the phone.
Right.
And she's going to give those tickets to you, wenn ihr mich jetzt anruft, unter der 030-2000-9000, Berlin 2000-9000, das ist die Nummer zum Glück. Ruft jetzt an für die letzten Tickets für Slow Dive heute Abend im Festsaal Kreuzberg. Das ist die erste Clubshow, wir haben es gerade gehört, seit 1995, die Band hier in Berlin spielt oder in Deutschland. Ein paar Festivals sind schon bespielt worden, aber eben noch kein ordentlicher Club. 030-2000-9000, das ist die Nummer zum Glück. Und ich sage Rachel, Nick, thanks a lot for visiting.
Thank you very much.
Have great fun on tonight's show, at tonight's show. And
it's
come
our
back.
Final show tonight. Oh. This is our, not ever, but obviously.
For 22 years, maybe.
It's our final show on this little week-long run we've been doing. So, yeah.
Cool.
It's our last
But you're going to come back again for the festival summer to Germany? And
we are playing at
Mayfield.
Nice.
Is it Mayfield Derby?
Yes.
In Mannheim, yeah. We're doing that one. And that has been announced. I'm thinking, what's been announced and what has been announced? We're doing Mayfield Derby, and we are going to be doing a proper European club tour later in the year.
Cool. Which
I don't know when yet. It's being organised now. Yeah. So we
it's going to be
back.
In the fall. I bet it's going to be in the fall.
Probably. Fall yes. or early next year, not sure. But cool. yeah, we'll be back.
And you know where we live right now, so you can just visit us the next time yes. you're in Berlin.
We will.
Doors are open, always open for you guys.
Thank you very much.
Slow Dive on Bamia. Thank you for visiting. Have great fun at tonight's show. Say hi to the others. And we'll be together again soon. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Okay.
Bye. Thank you.
Aus der Rubrik Fürstenfeldbruck's